selling internationally is like a insurance policy on your business. Last year, I did over $130,000 in sales outside of the US. It's really the same thing, except the number sign for the money.
Today's episode is sponsored by the new e-commerce podcast, The E-commerce Leader. The podcast is hosted by myself and Jason Miles, a multi-million dollar Shopify owner and Udemy's highest rated e-commerce instructor. If you own a thriving online business and want to be the best leader you can, it's got your name on it. For free guides and mini courses on many e-commerce topics, go to theecommerceleader.com.
I've just been speaking with Kevin Sanderson of Maximizing E-commerce about something that we often call international expansion in normal times, or the times we've seen as normal. However, the conversation I had with Kevin was much more about the fact that it's been a fantastic insurance policy for his business. As his US sales have taken a bit of a hit, his international sales have really kept his business afloat. Particularly today, we're going to focus on Canada, which for a lot of US-based sellers is a lovely, fairly easy step. And apparently the Canadians are very friendly and make it all happen. The original interview was on Facebook Live. And if you want to get access to the interviews, you'll want to join us at the Facebook group, which is at www.amazingfba.com/FB, or search for Amazing FBA in groups in your Facebook. So I'm dealing with some really great experts coming up in lots of topics like freight, which is quite challenging now, fulfillment, which can be very challenging, especially if you've got FBA stock in warehouses with Amazon. So if you want to get access to those as they happen, as opposed to waiting potentially several weeks for them to come through the podcast, just go to the Facebook group, www.amazingfba.com/FB, F as in face, B as in book. Love to see you there. Be part of the discussion, some lively discussion going on, and lots of videos being viewed and likes and loved and commented on. So it's quite a lively place, about 1,600 people, but it's growing month on month quite nicely. So you'll be part of a nice, thriving community. Do come and join us.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm newish to Facebook Live, but this one's going to be a lot more authoritative than my usual morning rambles. Thank you very much to the people who've been kind enough to watch that and comment that it's useful. Today, we've got a guest, Kevin Sanderson from Maximizing E-commerce. He's an Amazon seller, a podcaster, and a consultant for international expansion via Amazon. And that's the topic of the day. So, Kevin, welcome to, I don't really say welcome to the podcast, but I don't know what to say. Welcome to the Facebook Live / the podcast / whatever we repurpose this as. Good to see you again.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me, Michael. This is a lot of fun. It's nice chatting with people from the other side of the pond.
Yeah, it makes a nice change. I mean, it's funny that I was reflecting that Jason Miles, who's my new co-host for the new podcast we've got coming up, The E-commerce Leader. I know I introduced you guys the other day, and it struck me that the distance between where you are in Florida and him in Seattle and Washington is actually not that much more than the distance between you and me.
That's quite true. Weird.
It's a big old place, America, right? So, however, America is not the world, which is kind of what we're talking about today. I mean, it's very tempting, obviously, for a lot of Amazon sellers, even in the UK, to actually focus very strongly on Amazon.com, the US Amazon. And certainly for a lot of Americans, venturing outside that feels like a great big adventure. Although I understand the statistic that was in the 90s, something like 5% of Americans had their own passports. Apparently, that's now got to like 70% or something. So maybe the international expansion thing is not such an alien thing to Americans now. But I think for Amazon sellers, it can still be a block. So tell me about your experiences. I know recently you've had a bit of a validation of that approach of not just staying in the US. What's been your experience during this sort of crazy COVID-19 times?
Yeah. So it's been an interesting ride the last 4 to 6 weeks. A lot has changed in the world since I was on your podcast back in, I believe it was December, you know?
Yeah. It feels like a different decade at least, doesn't it?
Yeah. So for the longest time, I've been telling people selling internationally is like a insurance policy on your business. And, you know, at the time, like, let's say last year, I did, according to my 1099s that Amazon gave me for Canada and Europe, I did over $130,000 in sales outside of the US. So it was a nice chunk of change for really just offering my products externally. And that represented about generally speaking, it's been about a 30 to 35% bump on top of my US sales. So I always kind of like to think of my US sales as my foundation, because it really is. There is no other Amazon other than Amazon. You know, I tried like doing Etsy and I tried doing eBay and try all these other marketplaces. Like, I got to diversify off Amazon. I got to get off Amazon. And I came to find I understand Amazon. And so why not try these other Amazons in other countries? Because it's like really the same thing, except the number sign for the money looks a little different. So I, you know, started expanding. And like I said, it's grown to a six-figure per year channel, really just taking my same products and offering them elsewhere. Well, closer to now, you know, we're in this whole thing about, I'm sure a lot of people that are listening to this can relate to the idea of essential versus non-essential. And that's hit really hard in the US, where people, you know, they don't necessarily want to go to the grocery store or whatever, or, you know, maybe there's limitations in what they can buy in certain stores. And so they're buying a lot of kitchen and home related products. When I say kitchen, I really mean even groceries. So a lot of essential things you need to live are very much taking off. And I know people that are just absolutely crushing it with their products that they're selling, because their products are very focused on the now. Well, yeah. My products aren't. And I know for a lot of people, we have quote unquote non-essential. Someone else has decided our products are not essential. So either we couldn't send an inventory, or all of a sudden, you know, someone goes to purchase the product instead of having the Prime badge, or it gets to them like the next day, all of a sudden it's, hey, we'll get it to you in 30 days. And so Amazon, you know, thinks they're doing a great job, which I give them credit for all this. You know, they got to make decisions, but, you know, all of a sudden they're getting it to people in 2 weeks. And so they're under promising and over delivering by quoting 30 days and getting it to them 14 days. So of course that hurt conversions. So my sales in the US have taken a pretty decent hit. Now, pretty much across the board, my sales have been down because of all this. However, going back to what I was saying, whereas before, it was about a 30 to 35% bump on top of my sales I would see by selling internationally. It's been over 70% the last month. And so what that means is international sales have taken a bigger importance in my overall business and becoming less of a nice to have and more of a, I really need this to keep the business afloat and keep things going. So I've had days where I've sold more outside of the US than I have in the US. And I've had days where just some marketplaces are outdoing the US. Like the UK, I could look at this little graph and just circle the days where the UK has beat the US. And I'm pretty sure Germany and Canada have had some days. I'd have to go back and look at the graph to validate that. But it's crazy how important it's. So bottom line, I would say it's really important for people that are, you know, thinking about ways to diversify our revenue streams, you know, to think about international sales. Because I really think, regardless of whether or not someone decides I'm going to go sell internationally, we're now in a time where we can't look at what did I do on March 1st and say, that's what I'm going to be doing on September 1st. We're going to have to change something up. I know I am in my business looking at quite a different few things I can look at differently. And I think at the beginning of this whole crisis, people were kind of like, oh, let's just wait and see. But I'm starting to get more people reaching out to me about selling internationally because they're starting to see like, oh, okay, this could be one of the easier things to just add revenue and diversify my revenue stream. So maybe this is something to look into.
Yeah, well, a very interesting story. And I think I'm just taking a few notes here, by the way, because I, as sure. always, an obsessive note taker and and listening away. But in case it helps anyone, I'll pop the notes over at the blog for Amazing FBA. So just go to amazingfba.com/blog and you can find them there, because I sometimes feel it's helpful. But yeah, just to reflect on what you're saying, I mean, first of all, selling internationally is the easiest way that you found to expand. And I would second that. I mean, eBay and what have you, it's a whole different market. They don't have the share of e-commerce that Amazon does. And I like the fact that you're saying you just changed the currency symbol. I mean, there are a few more bits and pieces to go into, and we'll talk about that in a second. But basically, compared to anything else, including developing a new product line, that's so horribly difficult. I mean, if you want to go into hand sanitizers suddenly because they're all the rage, then you've got to find somebody who's good. Obviously, anything that's popular now, you won't be able to get any because supply is a huge issue. So we live in strange times, but the answer is not necessarily to do the really complicated, but to do the relatively simple. The second thing to say is that your reason for expansion may have been adding revenue, but now I think it's kind of proven itself with a slightly different thing. It's like it's keeping your business afloat, right? Mm-hmm. So I always think that an interesting way to put a metric on an expansion channel and the value of it isn't how much does it add to my revenue. It's like, okay, what's my monthly nut, as you guys put it in the States, and what's my monthly basics that I have to cover? And if that new sales channel with the profit from that, the gross profit, covers my overhead, that means that I could shut down my main sales channel and I would still survive as a business. I wouldn't thrive. It wouldn't be desirable. But I always think that's an excellent way to look at it, because Amazon shutting you down is a distinct possibility. But now, of course, with the COVID thing, the variability of not even just different countries, but the different states within the United States, so-called, which is not really the phrase that springs to mind at the moment, is so varied. The policies, the amount of hit by COVID-19, that it strikes me that it's incredibly important to diversify geographically now, like never before. So, and you validated that with your sales, you know, 70% of your sales suddenly coming from Europe, which amazes me because I'm in London. It's just as badly hit as New York, but for some reason, people are still buying stuff, right? That's what odd.
Yeah, just to be clear, that 70% number also includes Canada. So of course, it's not just Europe. I like to be upfront as much as possible. But still, when you think about it, just these are sales I would not have gotten if I didn't offer my products in those marketplaces. It's the same products I'm selling here in the US. So thinking of it this way, if I hadn't done that, what would my business look like today? So for people that are listening and they're thinking, oh boy, I should have done this. Well, you can't go back and change that. As they say, you know, if you wanted shade, the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is now. Yeah. So if you want the sales from international, the best time was before all this. Yeah. The second best time is now.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So I think let's talk a bit about the how to do it then, because we talked about, you know, the benefits you're personally seeing and probably keeping your business alive in essence. So Canada, let's talk Canada, because everyone talks about Europe a lot. And I know you've looked into the Canada thing, particularly for US based people. Tell me a bit about the basics, Simon. Is it just as simple as you just send them inventory from a US based FBA center like you would? If I'm based in UK, I can still do that to Germany just about. It's a bit tricky these days. Is it as simple as that, or is it a little bit more involved?
Yeah, it's a little bit more complex. I know earlier I was kind of oversimplifying it. And the reason I kind of purposely oversimplify it, because I think oftentimes in our heads, and I'm very guilty of this, is oftentimes we overcomplicate it.
Yeah.
And so if we go from the base of simplicity and just say, what are the steps? And we realize it's not as bad as what we thought it was going to be. And so going back to what we said before, it's literally just changing the currency symbol, but with a few extra little hoops.
With a few bits in between. Yeah.
But once you jump through those hoops, it pretty much now you just have another sales channel that's bringing you money every 2 weeks, just like the US does. Not as much, but it adds up. In fact, just to steal something from someone in a mastermind group I was with said one time, is that he was talking about, like, if he can get three different channels that each get him another 10-15% on top of his US sales, he's now diversified his revenue, or basically cut his risk, I should say, by a third. So I was like, well, that's a good way to look at it. I'm going to have to borrow that. So I'm borrowing it.
That's really good. Yeah. Risk reduction in a sort of very simple back of the envelope, quantifiable way. It's really, really good. I think, it was always true, right? But now people are very conscious of it. All right. So let's tell me about Canada. So what would take me, let's imagine that I'm based in the US like you are.
Sure.
And I've got a, you know, LLC or whatever it is, some kind of normal, you know, legal entity. I've got stock in China. I've got some stock in the USA. I'm wondering where to send the stock in China. And I could probably send, you know, a couple of cartons to test out this product line elsewhere in Canada. So where do I go from there?
Great question. So what I would say is, if you have product that's not in an Amazon warehouse in the US, that's the best to start with. But don't let best be in the way of at least starting. So what I would suggest is, what you could do is say, okay, I'm going to start with, you know, what I have existing outside of Amazon in the US, or if you need to, you can pull inventory out of the US, or just wait till the next time you order and take a small batch and then kind of set that off to the side. And some of it's just going to have to depend on what does the numbers look like, you know, for shipping. Is it worth it to just send it all into the US and then send some up to Canada, or send some, all of it, whatever you want into Canada, send that straight into Canada, like just a portion of it. Because you don't have to order a whole new batch, whole new MOQ just for Canada. So the interesting thing is Amazon doesn't want to be involved in the shipping of goods across a border. And so you as the seller have to be the importer of record. And so what you have to do is you have to register for a business number in Canada. Now, my disclaimer in all this, I am not a tax professional. Please consult a tax preparer or an attorney, whoever is the right person for you to talk to. But I've done enough where I've helped people do this in their businesses as well as I've done it in my own business. So I know how things generally work, which should work for most people, or at least help them answer or get the right questions to ask, I should say. So you want to register for your business number so that you can send stuff across the border.
So it sounds like the basic thing then is you might well send stuff out of the USA to Canada to start with, and you wouldn't necessarily advise starting from China or whatever, assuming that you're importing. If you're exporting from USA, I guess it's the same thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you'd start with stock in the US to start with them.
Yeah, I would. And I would. I always like to say start simple and make it harder later. You can always add the complexity. Yeah. You don't
have you can always get complex. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Exactly.
Okay. And so you need to get an importer of record. You need to be the importer. So you need to get a tax number in Canada. And yes, acknowledging you're not pretending to be, you're not playing a customs broker on the internet. But yeah. Right. And then what happens next then? So do I then do an inbound shipping to Amazon in Canada, somewhere in the FC in Canada? Or what do I do? Go into my Canada dashboard and do an inbound shipping? What's the step?
Yeah. Actually, it's very similar, but a little different. So I'll walk through that. All right.
Yeah, yeah.
So basically, what's similar is you have a little drop down, which a lot of people probably never even paid attention to. There was a drop down there where it's like your store name, and then it's got a US flag. Well, if you click the little drop down, there's probably a Canadian flag in there. You just switch to the Canadian flag. So now you're in Amazon.ca. So you would have to make sure that your products are offered there. So as long as you have the offers available, you would just go into manage inventory, you know, just like you do in the US, you create a shipment, and then you're going to go to the last screen. Now in the US, oftentimes people are used to where Amazon would give them UPS labels. Amazon wants nothing to do with the shipping itself. So all you're going to do is get an FBA label, to put on each box. So you put your labels on the boxes, just like you would, but you're going to have to get a label to actually ship it for the actual, you know, shipping portion. So that would either go through UPS, or that would go through your freight forwarder, whoever you want to work with. And then they would send it to, you know, wherever Amazon tells you to send your stuff, whether it be to British Columbia or to Ontario or wherever the case is that they have a fulfillment center that they want you to send to.
Nice. So it's broadly speaking the same workflow, but you just need to make sure that you acknowledge that the UPS partner carrier with Amazon does not work in Canada because you're shipping across the border. So I guess my feeling, and tell me about this. I mean, for people who are just sort of testing something, you don't want too much expense. My feeling is always I'd like to have my hand held by an expert the first time out. So I'd be tempted to use a freight forwarder. Would you suggest that as well? Or do you think it's too simple to bother with that?
It depends. So the one thing about freight forwarders, there's a lot of really good ones out there. One of the things I've learned about freight forwarders is, and this isn't a knock, this is, I would be in the same thought process of if I was in their shoes. But what happens a lot of times with freight forwarders is their mindset is get from point A to point B. And so what do I need to get from point A to point B? And so oftentimes they might say, oh, we'll even help you register for your business number for a non-resident importer. But you also need to get the GST, HST, which is the sales tax, which, again, I'm not a tax preparer, but I can tell you if you do at least $30,000 Canadian, which is, let's just call that $22,000 US in sales across the world by Canadian law, policy, whatever, you are supposed to register for the sales tax, and actually you get credits back that you would only get if you're registered. So there's no really reason not to. And oftentimes the freight forwarders don't even suggest that, and they don't register you for that. So now all of a sudden you could be down the road years later and you weren't getting the benefit of certain credits you should have been getting, as well as you might get a nasty gram from the Canadian government saying, why haven't you been paying us taxes?
Right. So in other words, from what you're saying, and you're very polite, but you're saying the freight forwarder is focused on getting things from A to B, and you need to think a little bit bigger picture, because you need to think about tax, which understandably they don't get into because they're not tax accountants or tax attorneys. But so you need to think a little bit bigger, and actually, so possibly a freight forwarder is not going to save your butt, is what I'm trying to avoid saying, in the way that we might hope. Okay, well, that's worth knowing. Thank you. And I know that in America and Canada that customs brokers are an official licensed thing and they're separate from freight forwarders. And that's not really the case in the UK and Europe. So there is a distinction to be made there. Maybe the freight forwarders focus on getting the parcel from A to B and the customs brokers focus on the customs import duty taxes side. So what's the simple way of doing this? And I suppose I'm adding a lot of complications to what you were encouraging people to keep simple. So what's the simple version of this?
Well, here's what I would say. So if you're ready to ship and you have a relationship with a freight forwarder and you have your business number, use your freight forwarder. Use whatever's simpler. Now, if you're in a situation where you are, maybe you're not working with a freight forwarder and you don't want to go find one, just use UPS. Just go on ups.com, create a shipment, put in your address or wherever it's going from to wherever the destination address is. And you can use promo code EASY, EASY, or you can use promo code FAST, FAST. And at least as of the last time I used it, it was saving as much as 40% off. And so that's a nice thing. And then you also end up getting on the radar of the salespeople over at UPS who... it's almost like they're in competition with each other. So whoever is in charge of the easy and fast promo codes and whoever's in charge of customer business development, whatever they call it, those people almost like are in competition with easy and fast promo codes. And so they'll call you and try to talk you out of using that promo code and like, well, we want to give you discounts. So I still use the promo code because it still ends up being better than their discounts, but sometimes their discounts are still good for other things too, which I wouldn't have had if I didn't use that. So bottom line is just use UPS. It's pretty simple, straightforward. It walks you through like what documentation you need to include with the shipment, like the commercial invoice, which people may not be familiar with, but like when your stuff, let's say, comes from China to the US, you have a commercial invoice. So that's pretty simple. Now, what will end up happening is if you mess up and you don't include the commercial invoice on the shipment, they will call you and they'll say, hey, we're missing this. Where is this? Because they're also, their goal is to get it from point A to point B. So whatever they need to get it from point A to point B. And then they will, generally speaking, say, hey, who are you using for customs brokerage? Because if you don't have it as set up in your account that UPS would handle it, they'll need to know. And so they might contact you and say, hey, who's handling your customs brokerage? And you say, can you help me set up an account? They'll help you set up an account with them. And then after that first time, you never have to fill out whatever paperwork. So point being, their goal is the same as yours, to get it from point A to point B, and they'll hound you. Just make sure you follow up with whatever they ask for in a very timely manner. Otherwise, they also might have to send it back to you if you don't follow up with them.
Nice. So that's one of those nice cases where you can, unlike it feels like a lot of our suppliers in China, where you just, if you don't say to a Chinese person, they say famously in the Chinese suppliers, I should say, build me a car, and by the way, including steering wheel, that famously they don't put the steering wheel on. Whereas it sounds like UPS has some common sense built in. And I guess that, you know, the British and American business culture is kind of similar in the sense that if you're trying to do something stupid and you're dealing with somebody in a technical place, like, you know, freight forwarding, they'll pretty quickly tell you what they need. So yeah, it's got a built-in correction mechanism, which is great to know because government departments don't always, and Chinese suppliers definitely don't. So that's comforting. That's very comforting. So basically what you're saying is you get on UPS, do what you think is right. And the bits you get wrong, they'll give you a phone call and say, we need this information. Do you have this? If not, we'll provide it. Is that the summary?
Yeah. And at the end of the day, remember, the Canadian government wants you to send stuff there because it's good for their citizens. You know, the UPS, they want you to send stuff because that's how their company makes money. So oftentimes we get intimidated by, oh, this is different and new. Well, pick up the phone and call the people at the Canadian Revenue Agency if you have questions about registering. Pick up the phone and call UPS if you have questions about international shipping. So just know there's resources to help you. So or call your freight forwarder if you have a freight forwarder you're comfortable with. And most cases, they've done international shipments to places like Canada and Europe and stuff like that too.
Nice. And what I have to say, and this isn't anything against ordinary Americans or the American government, but the you're making it sound like the Canadians are quite inviting of people shipping stuff out of America into Canada. And whereas with the US customs and borders, US citizens are funny because they're used to these things, but trying to import stuff into America, apart from, you know, the import taxes imposed because of the, you know, American government and the Chinese government and their big international, big sort of power struggles and 25% import duties. Even apart from that, sales tax is so complicated in America, and the import, I know lots of people who've had their own containers stopped at the US customs. And I have one person who had entire container inspected at his cost, thanks to the US import. I've never heard of anyone having that issue in Europe or in Canada. So I think actually the Canadians sound really cuddly compared to the US import authorities. It actually sounds a lot less stressful than trying to import your stuff from China to the US, from what I can say. I mean, have you had similar experiences, or is it just UK sellers that get these things?
I haven't had too much problem importing stuff into either country, but I will say this. In Canada, you know, they're stereotypically nice. And I've found it to be like when you call the Canadian Revenue Agency, you know, they're really helpful, and they really want to, and they're friendly. They're nice. They kind of go out of their way. It's like, you know, they're not just trying to rush you off the phone. Like, is there anything else we can help you with? Like, it's like you're calling like the Four Seasons or something. It's like, they're just really, really good service.
That sounds great. Well, look, that's really reassuring, actually.
Today's episode is sponsored by the new e-commerce podcast, The E-commerce Leader. The podcast is hosted by myself and Jason Miles, a multi-million-dollar Shopify owner and Udemy's highest rated e-commerce instructor. If you own a thriving online business and want to be the best leader you can, it's got your name on it. For free guides and mini courses on many e-commerce topics, go to theecommerceleader.com.